Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Bounds. On today's programme, we're reviewing the Australian horror film Talk to Me. With the help of an embalmed hand, a group of teenagers discover how to conjure spirits. It soon becomes a lively house party trick until, predictably, things get, well, out of hand, and the friends find themselves facing terrifying supernatural forces. The film is the directorial debut of brothers Danny and Michael Philippou, known in Australia for their popular DIY live-action horror comedy videos filmed for the YouTube channel Raka Raka. Sophie Wilde stars as the 17-year-old Mia, who, in the wake of the death of her mother 2 years previously, has settled herself into the family of her best friend Jade and Jade's younger brother Riley. Many critics have praised the strong performances at the centre of the film, as well as how Talk to Me is not only a jumpy thriller that makes use of gruesome visual effects, but also an exploration of family, grief and teenage anxiety. But what do our panel think? Well, I'm excited to be joined today by the film critics Karen Krasanovich and Christina Newland. But before we can talk all things Talk to Me, let's get a taste of the film. And in this clip, the main character Mia, subject to some peer pressure from her friends, as you'll hear, interacts with the hand for the first time. Okay, and dear listeners, she does let them in. And who could have guessed what could possibly go wrong? Christina, I'm going to come to you first. Should we judge horror movies like this on how scared we get, even in the heighty and lofty realms of film criticism? I jumped out of my seat on many occasions and screamed like a child, but the more seasoned pros, such as yourself, presumably have all of this in hand.
You would be sorely mistaken about that. I was basically clutching the front of my glasses trying to, it was a sort of like a please make it stop experience seeing this in the cinema. And I actually know a lot of other critics are similar. You know, we get into this field because we're reactive to movies. Maybe other people are more hardened than I am. I don't know. But I do think effectiveness is important when you're talking about genre film, you know, and horror. Horror is a, you know, it's a popcorn experience. It's there to make us want to hide behind our eyes.
Yeah, I'm heartened to learn that critics sort of like studying the maybe the bottom of the popcorn packet, or they're doing something, just anything to give a little bit, you know, to make their eyes a little less susceptible to the screen. Karen, is that your experience of Talk to Me? Are you good with horror movies?
No, I'm really not. I see maybe one or two a year. I mean, I do have to see them, but I'm a big hider behind the hands. And also, not just eyes, I plug my ears, because there are most of the horror movies made today, you know, recently, probably all of them, they have soundtracks that if you're not looking, you will hear what's going on. And so really, I just go into a non-sensory thing. I trust whoever I'm sitting next to is, tell me when it's over. Because then I will look. But that's one of the great things about this film, is that it doesn't have, not like Saw, for example, the Saw franchise, doesn't have a lot of those moments. So you actually get to watch a movie.
I mean, we can go on to talk about this. There is a lot more movie breaking out from the kind of underlying precipice of the horror, I suppose, with this new movie from Australia. So at least we're in good hands. Our listeners are in good hands today. So you cumulatively together have probably watched about 45% of this film. It's going to be a thrill ride.
But the parts we did see were excellent.
I was told the bits that I missed were mimed for me later.
But it is a funny thing. And just to stay for one more question briefly on that, on the critical track. When you watch this in a screening room with other critics, many of whom you'll know quite well, on going for a beer afterwards terms with, do you have to kind of bluster it out? Do you have to puff out your chest and make like you're not scared? Or when you're going to a genre film like this, as you say, Christina, part of the fun, even amongst the critical fraternity, is to be shit scared.
I think when a film is effectively scary, like Talk to Me, and it has this sort of dagger-sharp sound design, and it's so carefully deployed when it does have its moments of, you know, it's real scarce, that absolutely, as critics, you're coming out and you're going, that bit, you know, the bit with the decomposing demon, you know, was sucking on that guy's big toe. That was pretty scary.
Okay, so you sort of boil it down into specific parts of the film. You get chin strokey about the individual moments in which you were terrified. So some reviews, there's been a lot of love for this online. I mean, you know, on this program, we come to you, we come to the experts for our verdicts. But with genre movies and with horror in particular, so many people want to go out and see it on its opening night and have and form an opinion and go on their YouTube channels and talk about it. This appears to have a lot of love. I think maybe that's something to do with the fact that, as we say, there is a film kind of, there is a proper film, in inverted commas, struggling from underneath the corpse of the genre, I suppose. But what is it? What do you think, if this film is successful, what are some of the structures and processes, other than the scares, that make it a believable place for them to overlay the horror? Karen, how do you think it works?
Well, number one, it's beautifully cast. And I think that we get to make judgments about the characters, and we actually sympathize with them without them being mawkish or unbelievable or particularly, I mean, there's a little sniff of stereotypes here and there, but those are kind of dismissed or eroded. And so that's quite believable. It's done by a minor award, but a minor award-winning cinematographer, so it's beautiful to look at. And I just think that there's a sensibility about it. Now, the directors are YouTube directors, basically. But I think there's a sense of entertainment, but there's something more serious about it in the back. And I think one of them said that he was influenced by he had injured his hand and was influenced by that. And so it's got a deeper meaning, which I really didn't expect. And I think for me, that was the kind of wading into the pool of it.
Nice. I like the way that there is a backstory to this hand. I thought you were going to say he's read deeply into this and it reminds him of Proust's Madeleine there, Karen.
A very frightening Madeleine.
I was like, wow. I really must do the second volume again. You mentioned the look of the film, Karen, the cinematography. What about the design of the film? Does this look put together? I mean, there is a certain necessity sometimes in horror for it to look slapdash, for it all to happen in one room, for example. It is, after all, the genre of small beginnings and big takings, potentially. But how does this look?
Well, because film or production design is sort of the thing that I focus on most of the time, I found it quite satisfying. I thought the set deck, the interiors looked very compelling. They weren't overdone. And I found it felt like a real world within reason. Of course, it had a limited budget.
It's enough for one hand, but not two, right?
Wait till they get to the feet. It's going to be a bigger budget. I thought the design was very good for that. But I also think that the design was spare. A lot was done with lighting. A lot was done with editing. And also a lot, I think, was done by following the story, which in my impression, even though I did enjoy it, was uneven in the end. It's very difficult to land a film of this quality and of this length. It's not that long. Most horror movies aren't. But to be completely consistent, there were a few kind of, But in the end, I thought the landing was extremely satisfying and very creepy.
Nice. Yes, I think that's been a bit of the consensus has been you could drive a small car through some of the holes in the narrative there. But what about, Christina? People talk about elevated horror. This is a kind of quasi-critical term as well. Could you give our listeners, if you think this film falls into that category, what they might understand by that term, elevated horror?
I am not a huge fan of the phrase elevated horror because I think it does sort of imply that ordinary genre cinema, ordinary horror films, you know, a genre which has birthed masterpieces like The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, are, you know, somehow that we need to make something more intellectually highbrow or aesthetically stylish or perhaps expensive in order for it to be taken seriously. And I don't, you know, way down in my bones, I don't believe that genre cinema belongs in some sort of separate category, to, you know, so elevated, not elevated. But if you were going to use that phrase, I mean, this film premiered at Sundance. It's distributed in the States by A24. So it's got that Vogue about it. You know, there is something Vogue-ish about its beginnings, the way it's been made. It's made by these millennial brothers, these Australian guys who are, you know, have this YouTube background. And, you know, the film, I think, uses as its central premise, you know, this quite effective idea about this hand being, the pop psychology term, let go or be dragged. We're talking about grief, perhaps, in the case of a central character. You know, it turns that into something literal. So its themes as well turn it into something which people may say they could take more seriously than your typical horror film.
Okay, nice. No, I completely respect your love for the genre and the fact that it doesn't have to be sort of ghettoized into kind of trash and then treasure if you stick a kind of member of the Radiohead on the soundtrack or invest in some better lighting or something, right? I totally understand that. I wonder if there is something, as you mentioned, the central character. This is Mia, played by Sophie Wilde. Her mother passed away 2 years previously, the character, we should say. And this communing with the other world, as it were, through this hand, seems to set her free or take her mind off her grief to a certain extent. Is that something to do with this idea of elevated horror, this idea that the scares just aren't there for kind of popcorn spilling purposes in the cinema, but they're doing something more dramatic and more novelistic and more narrative focused, perhaps?
I think that horror has always taken grief as one of its central metaphors, and that great genre films that are really effective, both in terms of being scary, but just effective in an emotional, satisfying way, are often using either a supernatural story or an urban legend or the story of a serial killer to ask us larger questions. And that's why Talk to Me, it was one of the reasons why Talk to Me is so incredibly effective.
Nice. And I wondered if, because there is another sense in which this hand is kind of not only a gateway, but it is kind of a gateway drug, right? That has been discussed quite a lot as well. What do we think about that? I don't know how much either of you know about, you know, cheap thrills and and unsustainable highs, but there's something in the fix that these kids get off this communing with the other side that is like all these gas canisters you see, there's something like ketamine, there's something like laughing gas to it. Now, without any personal bean spilling, does this seem believable that this metaphor is explored in this film, or that actually it does feel this high you get off communing with the other side feels like a drug? Karen, I wonder if you can...
I was wondering who was going to get the points for the gateway drug question.
I've only come to you because I didn't want you wasting away
old
there.
And you've taken a lot of drugs, okay. Nope, that's fine. So
this is me presenting this show.
Christina,
it's going to be fine for you guys.
What about those gateway drugs? No, the really terrific thing about this was it overrides, and I really couldn't think, I'm sure there are other films, Christina, that do this, but most horror movies, somebody makes a decision. You're going, no, and that's the whole point. I mean, horror movies are basically date movies, and you're supposed to be crawling over the person you're with to save me, you know, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. That's one of the reasons why they're so popular. They're very reactive, but also, you know, you can, you know, further your relationship with somebody at the horror movie. One of the great things about Talk to Me is you understand why they're taking this risk. There are lots of, like, the Saw. I keep going back to Saw because it puzzles me and I find it makes me sick. There are reasons why in Saw they do the things they do. But for this one, you're with your friends and there's a great montage of them having a great trip, a great series of trips repeatedly by clutching the hand. And they're having a great time. That really surprised me. And I thought, wow, if only we knew. And we know that this is a movie about possession. If I knew possession would be that much fun, I might really consider it.
For sure.
It feels like this would have been an acid movie if this was in the 70s, right? It would have been this sort of cautionary tale about acid, right?
It's
Christina,
like
I'm coming to you for the acid vibes.
I would say, like, I mean, yeah, it's this idea of possession is supposed to be this kind of very visceral physical experience. It looks, deeply unpleasant. But also, this is sort of tapping into the other side of that, which is about adrenaline. So it's almost like, I don't know, acid, but like some kind of upper, I would say, where it's kind of fast acting and forbidden and addictive. And, you know, everyone's going around and around and around at these sort of house parties. It's one step beyond, you know, when Mia has to go home and her dad is asking her what's happening and what's going on. The first questions are always, you know, were you drunk? Were you high? And it's like, well, actually, no, we're just, you know, being possessed by spirits of the undead. But there's this kind of great link between these two things. And it does feel like, you know, these two directors are young. They come from this YouTube background. The film opens with this great sequence at a house party that they say actually on set turned into like a real rager. So there's a real kind of DIY, punky, hedonistic spirit to this movie in general. And I love that link that it makes between, it's like Karen said, the adrenaline that you get from watching horror films is sort of the adrenaline that you're getting, these kids are getting from the possession.
It was weird because I was thinking, this is the first time I've ever seen anybody really have, I mean, repeatedly have a good time before really bad things happen. I mean, and it was like, are you drinking? Are you high? No, but those are the symptoms I'm coming home with, or that's what I've just experienced. So we've got a hand for you, Robert.
Thanks. I'd love to know what that's like. I love those scenes. And to both of your points, it felt that the kind of high and the kind of collegiate, wonderful experience they were having, they're kids and they're having a brilliant time in the Adelaide suburbs, which isn't the most prepossessing place in the universe. And it really felt believable. I thought it was charming and lovely, which is why the flip side is horrible, but it's sort of, there's a tenderness to all of it. It doesn't feel, as you say, Karen, with the Saw movies, just grisly. It felt justified. And yes, could we use the word tender to a film like this? It certainly seemed to be tender to its protagonists, I thought.
Well, I really felt when they were trying to sing Sia's Chandelier in the car, nobody can hit that note. So I certainly had a lot of sympathy for, yeah. And that's another thing. The music was really good and joyish. A lot of the choices were brilliant. I think I felt very tenderly for the character. And Sophie Wilde's character, I felt for her. And also because she's so lost with the loss of her mother, and we don't know really what's going on with the father, because immediately think, oh, abuse. But, you know, we don't know, really. And so she seems like a lost soul, and yet we like her. And she does have a real sensitivity, and she isn't defensive, you know. So, yeah, you do feel tenderly for these people, which is, you know, traditionally in the horror genre, makes the tragedy even worse.
Thank you, Karen, for using the word lost soul there. I think that was what we were trying to, that was what we were trying to commune with the whole way through.
Okay, I'm looking forward to my points for that. No, that's good. But yeah. I think that's what we're dealing with. And I think, again, if you've grown up in a really small suburb, and Christina and I were talking before you so rudely came into the room, Rob, about growing up in a small town, and you do feel that you're sort of trapped. And I think this is another reason why this is popular with teens and kids, that, you know, this is a way out. This is a way to experience other worlds.
Yeah, it does feel that. It's a wonderful thing. I wish I could have slept after I saw it. I wish not everything made me jump in the mirror when I was brushing my teeth, when I finally got home, when I finally plucked up the courage to turn the key in the lock. But it had to happen. That's why the show has been so professionally presented today. So we mentioned at the top of the show that Danny and Michael Philippou, who are the two directors, these kind of people that cut their teeth on YouTube, they sold this at Sundance. This is an A24 production, but they crewed on Babadook, which is a much loved and admired horror film. And Christina, if we turn to our kind of further reading section of the program, the last 10 minutes, this is your sort of choice. So what do you think those brothers learnt on The Babadook, which again is horrendously petrifying?
They will have been in their 20s at the time. One was a production runner, the other was a lighting assistant on the film. They spoke about how much they admire Jennifer Kent, who directed Babadook, and how much they were inspired by her kind of having a really unique and singular vision that wasn't going to be altered by any external source. And they kind of directly took inspiration from that by actually refusing studio interest in the early stages of their ideas for Talk to Me. They actually turned down studio money so that they could kind of maintain a more independent spirit and not lose some of the more jagged edges in terms of the story and its style. So that kind of fearsome independent spirit, for one thing, is a huge influence on them. But also just in terms of it being kind of a great little genre vehicle, which takes a supernatural idea, in the case of Babadook, of course, this children's storybook monster ghost that lives in the basement of this house after this single mother who's suffered a terrible loss, lost her husband, and who can't really deal with the increasing emotional problems of her young child. So her grief, you know, it's very much a metaphor for her grief. And in many ways, the Babadook feels like a direct, you know, or I should say Talk to Me feels like a direct inheritor of the Babadook in terms of, first of all, just great scrappy Australian horror movies, but also, you know, using the supernatural gambits to tell a broader story about human psychology and suffering.
Yeah, beautifully put. I mean, yeah, and there is that idea that, yes, we're communing with the afterlife, or there's an ogre in the basement kind of thing. It scares us because of the jump scares and because of the music and because, but because it's accessing clearly some part of our psychology, something that we're scared of, something that we might have to deal with one day. There is not only the frailty of human flesh and the rendering of it, but there is something mental that's working that's very ingenious, I think, in these films somehow as well. Do you think those two things carry arm in arm in Talk to Me as well?
Yeah, and there's also this idea in both films about the monstrousness inside. And, you know, there's a point at which the Essie Davis character, is a great Australian actress, is the lead character in the Babadook, is almost brought to, you know, harming, attacking her own son. And so it's not, I don't know if it's possession as such, but, you know, it's another moment which we see, in, you know, reflected in Talk to Me about either self-harm or harming others through, in the case of, you know, in a literal sense, I guess it's a supernatural force, but it's also about something that's coming from within you. So that's ultimate fear, right? That it's actually us that are the monsters.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So that was Christina's choice. It's 2014's The Babadook, on which Michael and Danny Philippou cut their teeth. Karen, what have you chosen for your further watching?
Oh, I went a little crazy. I was thinking, wow, this is like The Monkey's Paw. No, it's not. It's like Bucket of Blood, 1959. No, it's not. Nor is it Crucible of Terror from 1971. No. I was thinking, what was it that was really getting to me? And everybody's going, well, it's like Jordan Peele's Us, or it's like Hereditary by Ari Aster. And, you know, I think it was the dread. I think it's, you know, I often say, when I had too much drink, you know, the real tragedy of everybody's life is that we all make the best choices we can. And I think that's why I chose Requiem for a Dream, which is the year 2000, Darren Aronofsky. And it is about characters you really care about that make the best choices they possibly can. And yet it is such a terrible outcome, such a terrible outcome. And Talk to Me does have a really terrible outcome. I mean, I think it's pretty bad. So, yeah, that's what it reminded me of. But I think Christina's points were really spot on. And this is kind of more of a whiff of the brimstone of just being really unlucky and maybe not having the experience or the emotional intelligence to make better choices, possibly.
Yes, and I love this as a choice, and I can see why you chose it, Karen, entirely. And it feels like there is, we're all kind of somewhere near the cliff edge, and it depends how windy it is on the day that it's our turn to stand nearest the edge, doesn't it? And there's something of that in Requiem for a Dream, that these people could have been anyone, but it happens to be them. There's the idea of the gateway as well, and that once you've gone there, you can't come back, or struggle as you might, you're kind of swimming against a really strong current, I suppose, in Requiem for a Dream.
And also a great cast. I mean, in the Babadook had a wonderful design. I mean, the design is mind-blowing. Same with Requiem for a Dream, and the cast, Ellen Burstyn, Jared Leto, and Jennifer Connelly. And we don't lose any of them, in a way. They're all there at the end of the movie as well. But it's just, you know, I've been afraid to watch that movie again, actually. I've watched it once and thought, maybe someday I'll go back.
It's but pretty brutal. It does have horror elements, doesn't it?
Very much so. But I think Talk to Me, I think you could watch again. Because, as I said, the gruesomeness, there's only maybe, didn't they took out some really, really gruesome scene, I think. They thought it was just too grisly. And there's only maybe, how many hide behind your hand moments would you say are in Talk to Me?
I'd say two, three, maybe.
Three.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Rob?
About 17. King of the Lads.
Talk to Me and Requiem for a Dream are like both fuck around and find out movies. They're both look at the consequences.
That's a new genre name. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Christina loves genres so much, she's inventing new ones willy-nilly.
I think that's high concept, too. I think we can go with that.
Yeah. On that note, having invented a new genre with such sparkly language, too, I think we're going to hide behind our hands one final time for my outro. But for the time being, my very great thanks to Christina Newland and Karen Krasanovich. And Talk to Me is out in cinemas now. Monocle on Culture is produced by Sophie Monaghan-Coombs and Steph Chung-Gu, and Steph also edits the show. We'll be back at the same time next week, but until then, from me, Robert Bound, thank you very much for tuning in.